Al Davis passed away on Saturday at the age of 82, the owner of the Oakland Raiders and probably one of the most interesting figures I and most people who are in the media have ever met. And Carmen Policy joins us now on Sports Byline. He was the president of the San Francisco 49ers for a period of time and then became part owner and the head of the Cleveland Browns. And I wanted to have him on because I wanted to get a perspective from you, Carmen, about his legacy, at least from a league standpoint. But let me start at the very beginning. If my memory serves me correctly, wasn't Al Davis partly responsible for Eddie DeBartolo or maybe even majorly responsible for Eddie getting the San Francisco 49ers?
There's no question about it that Al Davis was involved from the very beginning in terms of dealing with the Morabitos and the Muleys in an effort to bring some buyer to the table other than Wayne Valley. And, you know, Al was very methodical and very strategic, shall we say, in his thought process as it related to how he saw the landscape in which he operated, and he didn't want Wayne Valley involved with the 49ers, and he reached out to the Spanos family first, and when the Spanos family did not seem willing to step up to the plate to the tune of, shall we say, $17 million, because they thought that was an outrageous amount of money to spend for an NFL franchise at the time, he did convince Ed DeBartolo Jr. and Sr. to come out and kick the tires and sit down with the Morabitos and the Muleys, and also sit down with Lou Spadia, who was the general manager at the time. And eventually they wound up not only feeling that this is something that they should do, but they paid the asking price of the $17 million.
Tell me a little bit about your first impression of him when you first met him and maybe what you had heard about him and what you found him to be.
Well, my first impression was that this was a very unique, interesting, and in some ways a pretty cool guy. Now, we're going back to probably 1978, 1979, and Al was still in Oakland, and he operated differently than most, if not all, of the other owners of the NFL.
What does that mean, by the way, Carmen?
Oh, I'd say just the way he approached the game. He was very much involved with football operations, understood the game from a coaching standpoint, was very involved in terms of personnel. And this was a time, if you'll recall, that was not characterized by significant or sophisticated electronics. This was a time when connections, style, technique, and if you will, chutzpah, really played a role in terms of how you got information on players, how you took care of certain people in certain towns where big colleges were located to get the scoop on how a certain player conducted himself around town, worked out at the gym, worked out at the practices, and so forth. And Al understood all that, and he had a great network, and he was ahead of the game, shall we say, independent of the typical scouting operations that were in play at that time. So again, he was a slick operator. He was very, very slick.
One of the things that I assume, and if I'm wrong about this, Carmen, please correct me, but he grew up in Brooklyn, and I always thought he was very streetwise, and that was a little bit different than what you found from the other moneyed owners in the National Football League, and he seemed to stay true to that background, those roots. Am I correct about that?
I think Al was very comfortable on the street. I think in many ways he was more comfortable on the street than in the boardroom, and I also think that he was a little more comfortable in terms of dealing with people more directly connected to the street than he was in terms of dealing with people that were in the corner offices or, shall we say, making the major business decisions for companies throughout the country. Not that, of course, he wasn't invited in to all levels of activity related to football and related to show business. But he was very comfortable in that environment that we commonly refer to as the street.
I also think it was manifested in the way he built his teams. As everybody pretty much knows, he would go out and get the player that either had trouble. And I always tell this story when we went down to the Super Bowl, when they played the Philadelphia Eagles down in New Orleans. And I'll never forget there was a curfew at 11 o'clock, and there was nobody that made that curfew. And I was coming in with a player at about 2 o'clock in the morning. We had been out on Bourbon Street. And I remember Tom Flores coming down the steps saying, why are you out? And the player looked at Tom and said, well, Ron couldn't sleep, and we went out to try to find him some warm milk. And Tom paused for just a second, and he said, well, that glass of warm milk is going to cost you $1,000.
Oh, boy. And you know what? Al probably, since they won the game, Al probably forgave it before Monday came along. He did create an atmosphere where some talented, but shall we say challenged individuals could almost flourish. And it's kind of symbolic of his logo. You know, he was the privateer. He was the fellow providing the pirate ship with the very powerful cannons and the big sails and telling them, you know, you don't have to be a Boy Scout or necessarily even a really good citizen to come on board and be part of my crew. Just be able to, you know, handle the mainsail and be able to shoot straight and be able to use a sword when it's time to board the ship that we're going to basically plunder. And it worked. It worked for him.
Part of his image also was kind of poking a stick in the eye of authority, and he certainly did that a number of times with the National Football League, going to court, beating them. And I know that Pete Rozelle, probably they never switched Christmas cards for sure. But tell me how the league looked upon Al Davis.
Well, Al was a terrible partner. He really marched to his own drumbeat. And I keep going back to the Raider image. He really didn't fly the flag of the NFL. He was basically what his team is presented as. He was a skull and bones kind of guy. He even testified on behalf of the USFL, if you'll recall, when it was a life and death lawsuit involving the National Football League. And there was never a time when you felt that he was a team player or that he was going to help cooperate with whatever you were doing, unless totally met with his own private agenda, and even then he would sort of begrudgingly go along with it, almost hating the fact that he was going along with the process even though it was helping him. He was not a very good partner at all.
I think it's fair to say, is it not, Carmen, that there probably has not been a man associated with professional football that was involved in so many critical areas, because here was a man that was a coach of the Raiders for a period of time, and a lot of great coaches came off of his system, such as Bill Walsh. He was also the commissioner of the AFL, and during that period of time when they got involved and merged with the National Football League, and then he was an owner as well. I can't think of anybody else in pro football history that had so many titles associated with him and was successful in almost all of them.
Well, I think I didn't have the pleasure of knowing Mr. Hallis, but George Hallis, I think.
Good point.
Might be one of the people that we are able to compare, but look how far back we have to go in history. We have to go back to one of the founders of the NFL, and you're right. And I think what we have to say when it comes to Al Davis is, for a period of many years, he was successful at doing what he did the way he did it. I also think that people tend to forget that the NFL, yes, it's one of the great sports of our time, but it's show business. It's the entertainment world. And Al was a character. He was a unique personality. He was a bigger-than-life type of persona. And as such, he brought flair, panache, drama to the National Football League. He brought headlines. We didn't have to be playing on a field on a Sunday afternoon to have America pay attention to us. Just they were paying attention on Tuesdays to find out what was going on between Al Davis and the league, or to find out what some of the other great characters within the league were doing. And so I think there's no question that he helped build the National Football League, and I think there's no question that he belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we've got about 30 seconds left, and when you take a look at him, is there any one thing you always remember about Al Davis, Carmen?
He was charming and funny when he wanted to be. And he would always call my home, and he'd always talk to my wife, knowing I wouldn't quite be home from the office yet, and he'd talk to my wife, and he'd refer to her by her maiden name, and of course he was as charming as can be, and he said, now make sure that when your husband gets home, I'm the first one he calls. And guess what? When I got home, Gail made sure that the first one I called was Al Davis.
I want to thank you, Carmen, for your remembrances. Take care, my friend, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Carmen Policy, former part owner of the Cleveland Browns, the head of the 49ers, talking about Al Davis, who passed away this past weekend. We continue on Sports Byline.